Electric scooters could soon come to the town of Normal. Mercy Davison is a planner for the town. She says the town is talking with a vendor about a program similar to the bike sharing program already operating. Davison says many college towns have such programs in which users stick a credit card in the scooter and go.
The e-scooter programs that we've looked into are all app-based. So you put the app on your phone, you check the bike out, and basically you get charged to ride it around. Unlike the original bike share stations, there are not fixed parking areas, so you have to park them in a reasonable manner, not in the way, and different companies have different ways of making you do that, but it's a lot more flexible for the users.
How do you avoid clutter then? I mean, if they're supposed to park them in a certain way, there won't be a standard docking station for them.
That's correct, and certainly that's the biggest concern that most communities have, and I would say we're included in that group. The companies themselves, some will provide or will require a user to take a photograph of where they have parked their scooter and submit the photograph along with the clicking of the end ride button. So when you click end ride, that means I'm done paying for this ride. And they're requiring you to demonstrate that you have parked the scooter in an appropriate location, meaning not in the street, not in the middle of a sidewalk, not in the middle of an ADA ramp, etc., not in a creek. So that photograph helps the company figure out who are the bad apples in their group. There's also the ability to put decals on the concrete or asphalt if you really want to tell people this is where we want these scooters to be parked, but it's never going to be a structure that you park the scooter next to.
Let's talk about retirement community speed limits. Seniors in scooters in retirement communities are sometimes a hazard to their pedestrian counterparts because they go too fast down the halls of retirement communities. I can see a similar kind of thing happening down sidewalks or down the curbside for these scooters. How is that problem to be considered?
Sure. I mean, you think about an e-scooter, it's similar in a lot of ways to a skateboard in size and speed. And so in an area like Uptown, where we've already passed an ordinance that you can't have your skateboard or your bicycle, for that matter, on the sidewalks in Uptown, I would anticipate if we have an e-scooter program, we would extend that same ordinance to e-scooters. So you'd be required to ride them in the street in a place like Uptown Normal because our sidewalks in Uptown are very busy. Outside of Uptown Normal, I think the approach would be more flexible because there just aren't as many pedestrians on every single sidewalk in Normal. So it would be similar to bicycles in that way.
Obviously, you're not reinventing the wheel. Portland has these. St. Louis has them. How have they dealt with these issues?
You know, I'm not sure about those two specifically. I know that a more comparable place would be Purdue University in Lafayette, West Lafayette, Indiana. They have these scooters, and they're in the early stages of kind of getting a handle on it. It's pretty common to see speed limits on the scooters. Well, it's universal that there are speed limits. And also parking restrictions, trying to work with the company so that the company can require the scooters to be parked in certain locations. There's actually a lot of technology behind this, and so that's where it gets really interesting. Each scooter has a GPS unit on it, and so they can be very precisely located and tracked by the company. So because there's this software, they can also draw what's called a geofence in the software, and that can actually tell the scooter where it is allowed to be and not to be and where the speeds are at different levels. So let's say we draw a geofence around Uptown Normal and say, in Uptown Normal, you can only go 10 miles an hour. The scooter will know that, and so as soon as the scooter enters that boundary, it will automatically slow to 10 miles an hour. If we say we don't want any parking in Uptown Circle, a rider would not be able to stop their scooter on the circle and hit end ride. The scooter would tell them, no, you can't end your ride here. You need to keep going until you find a place where you are allowed to park. And in the meantime, you're still paying. So there's an incentive for the rider to find an appropriate parking spot because they don't want to keep paying. It's not cheap. So there are technological ways to encourage good behavior, which is pretty exciting.
This is a campus community. How is ISU working with you?
We're in active conversation with them about this because we want to make sure we're moving forward in lockstep, because clearly anyone using a scooter is going to end up on the campus because we're, there's so many people on the campus who are likely users of this kind of program. So I know we're working with folks over at ISU to talk about things like speed limits and parking and what they think about the concept at all. And, you know, they have their counterparts at universities all over the country. I have to assume they're doing some research to see what successful programs look like at other universities.
Some scooter companies have just gone into communities and started without permission, without interfacing. Portland punished those who did that by setting up an agreement and a quota system with three companies who did play nicely with them. Do you anticipate this could be a problem for you?
You know, it hasn't happened yet, and the fact that we've been contacted by two companies who didn't just dump their scooters here is very encouraging. I think because we're just a significantly smaller market than those kinds of places is probably why. So at this point, we have a really good conversation going with one company, and if we do move forward, it will be a one-year pilot program with a lot of rules in place, but with the goal of figuring out whether or not this works, and if it does, what works well about it, and what do we need to tweak to make it better.
Are there metrics of success that you can use from the bicycle program with Zagster that are likely to be applicable to scooters?
Yeah, I think there's some commonalities. With the bikes, we do run into a little bit of issue where somebody will leave a bike somewhere that's not an official bike station, and then Zagster has to figure out how to collect those. With the scooters, it'll be easier because each scooter has a GPS unit. The bikes don't. So the bikes are a little harder to find if somebody doesn't put it back. So I think the opportunities are a lot better with the scooters in that regard.
There was a car sharing test pilot. There's a bicycle sharing program. You're talking about a scooter sharing program. There are electric skateboards. There are electric assist bicycles. There are Segways still around, and Segway technology is moving outward to sort of unicycles now that are balanced on one wheel. So there are all these little conveyances that are hitting the market in various ways. How is a town to have an overarching policy to keep everyone safe and everyone going where and how they need to go?
I think it's just going to require a lot of conversation and a lot of piloting of different technologies. The one thing that seems clear is that it is impossible to stop these things. People want them. Consumers want these options. Frankly, it opens up opportunities for people who don't have other opportunities. So, like, car ownership is very difficult. It's a lot cheaper to own something like a bicycle or an electric assist bicycle or some other device. So there's some interesting equity opportunities that are presented by these technologies, but then there's also the nuisance factor and the safety factor. And I don't think anybody has all the answers yet, but we're certainly working on it. As the cost of these things come down, they'll be just a lot more available to people. I mean, you remember the Segway discussion back in the 90s, and suddenly we were worried about Segways on sidewalks in major metro areas. Well, those things cost thousands of dollars, so it never became the problem people were really worried about. But when you're looking at devices that cost a couple hundred dollars, like you said, people own these electric skateboards now. You know, there are just more of them out there. So we really are trying to, instead of just sticking our heads in the sand or just being irritated by it, we're trying to embrace it responsibly.
What about walking, hiking, biking areas like the Constitution Trail, which right now doesn't, you're not supposed to have motors on anything that you use on those, although it does happen. As these sorts of devices proliferate, are you going to have to patrol the trail? Are you going to have to require everyone to have governors in town, and that without governors, they're not going to be allowed to have them, or what?
There's a couple of things on that issue. The e-scooters themselves, just as an aside, all have a governor that keeps them at 15 miles an hour or less, which is positive. And you can draw areas where geofences that restricts the speeds differently in different areas. On the trail right now, the speed limit is 20 miles an hour, which frankly, if someone is riding a bike 20 miles an hour on the trail, that will feel very fast to anybody who's walking. If you get hit by someone going 20 miles an hour, that's not good. And we don't see a lot of that on the trail. So these scooters, by their very nature, already can't go as fast as a bicycle on the trail. there is the issue of it being a motorized vehicle. So our Parks and Recreation and Police Department and Legal are thinking about that and figuring out what do we do with these? Because they will be more popular than the handful of people in this town who have an electric skateboard, who I have seen on the trail, by the way. But yeah, we're ferreting out these issues right now. The trail is beloved. We like people to be on it. We want people to be safe.
Well, if these scooters already can't go as fast as a bicycle can go, then why have a motor prohibition on the trail? If the original intent of the motor prohibition was to prevent speeders.
You know, that rule has been in place probably since the trail opened in the late 80s, and I suppose one of the thinking at the time was probably to clarify that you couldn't have a motorized, like, car type of vehicle or a golf cart or something like that. Just to be real clear, people, that's not what this trail is for. I don't think anybody back then was thinking about an electric assist bicycle or an electric skateboard or the kinds of motors that you're seeing in things now. I think there are a couple people in town I've seen with bicycles that have been retrofitted with gasoline-powered engines. I don't think anybody wants to see that on the trail. So there's this gray area of motors that are seem much more acceptable than others.
So the town is going to take a stab at crafting policy on this?
We are. We're definitely looking at it right now because, you know, the opportunity is there. These things are likely to end up in our community, and we're not even opposed to it. We just want to make sure it happens in a responsible way.
When will it be soup, or at least soup enough to take to town council members?
What you'll probably be seeing in 2 to 4 weeks will be if we reach some sort of an agreement with an e-scooter company, and then any sort of ordinance that would have to go forward at the same time to clarify where these can and can't be ridden. That would include the trail, whatever the determination is there.
Town of Normal planner Mercy Davison says all the scooters have lights and a bell to safely operate in early evenings, though there would be time limits on the hours of operation. The Town of Normal is partnering with Zagster and an e-scooter company named Spin, which is owned by Ford.